This is the Fantasy Focus Books and Authors Podcast, episode 18. Good day and welcome to this episode of the Fantasy Focus Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is. It's a show focused on everything to do with fantasy books, whether you're talking about epic fantasy or urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, anything else you can think of in fantasy. Expect to find the best and brightest authors from all the various corners of the fantasy book world here on the show. You know, today I'm pumped because my new book, Cybers Change, hits the online bookstores today. I'm so excited. I've put a lot of work into getting this book together and getting it out there with a lot of help from a great number of people who've helped pull this together for me. And there's a lot of personal reasons this project is important to me, not the least of which had to do with some of parts of it being written for my younger daughter and her fiancé. Head out and check out Cybers Change, whether you want to get the ebook, the paperback, or the audiobook formats. They're all available for you wherever you get your books online. I actually am excited about it. I think it's one of the best stories I've written yet. It's a near future sci-fi dystopian story that I think a lot of people will enjoy, even those who typically enjoy fantasy books. But you can pick it up if you want and let me know what you think. As always, if you're interested in more information on what I'm up to, you can check out my fan group on Facebook, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Superfans, and on my website and blog, jamiedavisbooks.com. Okay, let's go ahead and get on and introduce our podcast guest for today's episode. I'm really excited to say we have Andy Peliquin on the show. Andy is first and foremost a storyteller and an artist with words, and he actually says words are his palette. Fantasy is his genre of choice, and he says he loves to explore the darker side of human nature through the filter of a fantasy hero as well as fantasy villains. And I think this is an important discussion we have. He's also a freelance writer, a book lover, and a guy who says he just loves to meet new people. He spends hours talking about his fascination for the worlds he encounters in the pages of fantasy novels. Andy writes in his own version of the intro I had him do that fantasy provides us with an escape, a way to forget about our mundane problems and step into worlds where anything is possible. It transcends age, gender, religion, race, or lifestyle. It is our way of believing what cannot be, delving into the unknowable, and discovering hidden truths about ourselves and our world in a brand new way. Fiction at its very best. You know, I couldn't agree more. I think he wrote it very well, and I'm happy to be able to read it for him. Check out my chat with Andy. It's coming up next. Andy, I want to welcome you to the Fantasy Focus Podcast. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed listening to your previous episode, so I'm totally not nervous about what this one's going to be like.
Well, good, because I'm not nervous either. Let's hopefully it'll work out. I always, you know, it's interesting. I get nervous talking to other authors and, you know, just kind of trying to make sure that we have some things in common. And I'm finding that we have more in common than I ever really thought.
Oh, absolutely. Authors are a quirky lot and we all have our quirks. And that's probably the thing that binds us more than anything else.
Absolutely. So why don't you introduce yourself and a little bit about some of the books you write just in general, because I'm sure a lot of people in the audience know who you are, but others probably don't. So let's give them an opportunity to learn about you.
Yeah, totally. I am Andy Peliquin, author of sort of epic dark fantasy, dark epic fantasy, however you want to put it. I write the Hero of Darkness, Queen of Thieves, and Heirs of Destiny series. They're all set in the same world with characters that intertwine with each other. They're all connected, sequels, spin-offs, things like that. I was a huge Marvel Comics fan growing up. I'm going to say growing up, but I only started reading it at age 18. So as a young adult, I guess. And I was like, man, I loved it when Wolverine showed up in the Avengers or when Captain America teamed up with the Fantastic Four to take on some bad guys. So I was like, I'm going to do that with my book. So all of my stories are set in the same world. They're interconnected. Every series that I have written and plan on writing are going to be that same connected world. And it's all sort of darker fantasy in the sense that it's the darker side of society. There's thieves and assassins and bounty hunters and intrigue and things like that. But it's a ton of fun. All these epic battles and sword fights and magic and things like that.
You know, it's funny you say that because I can still remember the first time the Punisher showed up in a Spider-Man comic. And I probably was about 18 at the time myself. And I just was hooked on the character instantly, so much so that I still have the first five issues of the original Punisher comic book here because I became hooked on the Punisher back then. And it's pretty cool. But it must be kind of daunting. I mean, you build this world and have all these interactions going on. Do you find it hard to keep track of the different characters and the uniqueness between them?
You know, so each series follows sort of a different main character or a main story, and they stand on their own. But then when you read all of the stories in the world, which is all of them, you start to see the bigger picture, the pieces of the puzzle falling together. And it's not like there's some big, you know, overarching behind the scenes plan that I have that, you know, in book 30 or 25, it'll come to play. And you're like, wow, there's these amazing things between all the, I'm not that good of an author, but I love it. Just, you know, having the characters show up in the other story and the other series. And it is a little tricky to figure out the timelines and stuff. Like I've had to fudge a few details here and there, a few ages, and be less than concrete with the timelines, just because if I want to make these characters show up here, they have to change a little bit from how I originally conceived them.
That's great. I mean, I can imagine that, you know, it gets a little challenging, but I think it's fascinating. It's interesting. I wasn't aware as I was looking over all the books you have that they were all in the same world. I hadn't picked up on that directly. I just started reading Darkblade Assassin and love it. It's just such an intriguing character. Was this the first series you wrote?
Yes, the Dark Blade Assassin. It used to be called Blade of the Destroyer. It was originally published under a different title, and I started writing that book first. I completed books 1 and 2 and 3, actually, in the Hero of Darkness series before I took a break to write the Queen of Thieves series, because that one got picked up by another publisher. So I was writing these two series, and as I was writing the second book in the Night Guild series, I wanted to bring the two together. So one of the characters that shows up in Darkblade Assassin, the alchemist guy who, you know, gives him his poisons and stuff, it ends up that the thief steals the alchemical clay that the hunter uses as his masks for his disguises and stuff.
And that is such a cool mechanism of, like, you know, the way he uses the magical or the alchemical disguises, the clay, to just change his appearance completely. It's pretty cool.
It's definitely a fun thing to play with. My world doesn't have a lot of magic. The hunter's dagger is magical. There is some ancient magic and stuff like that. But I play with alchemy a lot. Like the series I'm writing now is military fantasy, sort of Rainbow Six Ghost Ops style special ops unit. And in a world with no magic, how do you have, you know, a force of 7 men defeating a force of 2 or 3,000? And that's where you have to get creative. And so I've been playing with alchemical stuff, you know, an explosion to bring down a bridge or a sudden fire to distract the enemy or things like that. And it's really fun, really challenging too.
You were talking about earlier describing your work as dark epic fantasy. And I definitely get a sense of that reading Darkblade Assassin. You know, the idea for the cursed, I guess I'd call it a cursed dagger, is, you know, that the assassin carries, that causes him to really, you know, hear voices telling him to kill. It's kind of scary. Did you come up with that as a separate device, or was that always part of the character from the beginning?
That was part of the character from the beginning. I wanted to give him a reason to be an assassin. So I did a lot of research into the psychology of assassins, and the Secret Service published a whole study on it. And there was 8 reasons that people became assassins or hitman, contract killers, things like that. Very different than serial killers, psychologically speaking. Some of them were trying to send a message or make a political statement. Some were for religious reasons. Some were just for money. And psychological and mental disorders were one of the factors. And so I was like, okay, that could be a fun one to play with. And at the time I had just been diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome on the autism spectrum. And so I was diving deep into the world of psychology and neurology to understand what was going on in my own brain. And it just worked perfectly. I had found these connections to this other part of the human life that a lot of series don't really delve into. You know, fantasy often focuses on the emotional aspects, but it doesn't get into things like psychopathy, sociopathy, bipolar disorder, or the fantasy I was reading at the time. Nowadays, modern fantasies evolved a lot to deal with those topics a lot more deeply. But it just worked so nicely to have this voice in his head that drives him to kill, because it's almost like an addiction in the sense that he can't shake it. If he doesn't kill, the voice gets louder to the point of being debilitating, so he has to kill. And it played into this driving urge inside of his head, this psychological imperative implanted that he has to kill for X reasons that you discover in the story, that plays really nicely with the whole character and his epic battles and the worlds he faces and the enemies he defeats. They're all sort of incidental to his own struggle with himself. And I really like that dichotomy between the character who's just a total badass and yet doesn't want to kill, but he has no choice. So he's fighting with himself the whole time.
Yeah. I'm not that far into the book, maybe I think 5 or 6 chapters, but I definitely get that sense of inner conflict that is going on within himself. And yet he seems inherently a decent person. It's just he's got this conflict going on inside. And I like that idea of kind of discussing and dealing with mental illness in an aspect or psychology in an aspect that someone is dealing with the challenge doesn't make them a bad person.
Yeah, totally. As someone who has lived with Asperger's syndrome, I guess my whole life, but the knowledge that I've had it for years, it was sort of refreshing to realize, okay, I'm not weird. I'm not messed up. I'm just different. I have an atypical neurology. So coming to that realization, it sort of normalized a lot of things for me. It made me understand, okay, this is just who I am because of my brain or because of the way that I think as a result of this disorder. And that really inspired or intrigued me to think, okay, who else would be like this? What other kind of characters or villains from history would be like this, and so it was really exciting for me to delve into this concept of someone who is driven to kill by an internal force that is outside of his control.
You know, it's interesting. I use a lot of deeper themes in my fantasy to talk about things that are important to me. I'm a paramedic and a nurse. And so healthcare issues that are going on in the world around me tend to bleed their way into my books, at least in some way, because I want to try to point out how some of these issues are universal, even in another world or another setting. And I'm curious what your thoughts are, because fantasy seems to lend itself for us to kind of present deeper issues in a different context.
Oh, absolutely. And this is, I've said this about fantasy pretty much every time I talk about it. It creates this dissociation from an issue. Like, let's say I was anti-religious, right? And I wanted to attack the evils of whatever church I was against. Let's say the Catholic Church, because it's an easy target, right? If I wrote, okay, the Catholic Church is bad, it does this, a huge percentage of the world would feel personally attacked and my message would never get through. Whereas I make up my own religion. Sure, there are some strong similarities and those are what I attack. People who read it, they might get the similarities. They're more likely to get the message, but then they're dissociated from the label Catholicism. They're dissociated from the religion that they believe in. And all of a sudden it becomes less of a personal thing and they're open to hearing it. So I love how fantasy does create this dissociation that you can examine things, everything from sexuality to gender to religion to politics to basic humanity, without attacking people directly, without making people feel like they're being attacked directly.
You know, Michael Evan over at the Fantasy Focus Facebook group wanted me to talk to you about being a prolific writer, because I think he believes you and I have that in common. We tend to, I think, write quickly. And I noticed you tend to publish your books close together when possible. What is it that drives you to write faster than what some other authors might put out? I try not to make this a comparison because everybody has to write at their own speed, has to be creative at their own creative level. But I'm intrigued what makes other people tick, because I just have all of these stories I want to get out. I can't get them out fast enough.
Yeah. Yeah, there is that element. For me, probably the main thing, I'm a father to four teenagers now, and the not sole breadwinner, but primary breadwinner. So for me, being able to write is sort of the dream job. You know, I could see myself doing that for the rest of my life. But in order for me to be able to do that, to have the time, it's got to make enough money to cover the bills. Life continues. So it's sort of trying to marry the necessity, the duties of my life as a parent and a professional with my love of storytelling and fiction. So I am driven to write quickly because it helps me to have more products to sell, which means I can make more money quickly, which means I can pay the bills so I could pull back from other day jobs and focus more on the writing. So it's done with the intention of being able to write freely and really take my time and let each story breathe and develop on its own without worrying about, oh, where's my next meal going to come from?
Yeah, and that's, I think, the misunderstanding some people have, that a story that's written quickly is not as good as a story that's ruminated over for a year and a half, 2 years. And I think that's a misunderstanding, because if you talk to some authors, they'll tell you that the basic story of a lot of books came out very quickly, that they sat down and wrote it quickly. And it was the stretch of time had more to do with the publishing process and the editorial process than it did with the story itself.
Oh, yeah. R.J. Barker was on the Fantasy Fiends podcast a while back, and he was telling us he wrote his first book, Age of Assassin, sorry, in 6 weeks. And for most, authors who are traditionally published, or who, I would say the average author, for them, 6 weeks writing a book is completely unheard of, because it's so much writing in such a short amount of time. But he was totally inspired to do it. I'm less of an inspirational writer and more of a professional writer, in the sense that I have these deadlines that I've set for myself. And so I'm just going to sit down and put in the work to hit those deadlines. And I find that the story just flows on its own, because I keep pushing, I keep working at it. You know, there's days that are rough. There's days that it's like, oh, I don't want to write at all. But when I push through, I found that some of my best work actually comes out on those days.
Yeah, it's funny how that works, because I'm the same way. I set very stringent deadlines for myself, and I stick to them, even if it means that I'm, you know, pulling a 16-hour day just writing until I get a project finished. And I've always found that when I push myself, or some of those times when I tend to surprise myself the most.
Yeah, it's amazing what can happen when you are hopped up on caffeine and too tired to stop.
Yeah, the brain's a wonderful thing, and can be scary sometimes. I think some of the things we end up coming up with out of the blue, it's just kind of amazing. So let's look at some of the other stories, because I was not aware they were intertwined, and now I'm really intrigued. I'm now stuck in the universe of Andy Peliquin, I think, for a little bit, which is kind of cool. But you have the Heirs of Destiny books, and you also have the, of course, the Hero of Darkness, which we already talked about. And then there's another one, which was Tales from the Defiant Guardians, I guess.
So the Defiant Guardians is an anthology that I have one story in.
Oh, okay. So that's an anthology series. Okay. Yeah. I see that now as I'm scrolling down to look at it. Because I had seen that in there, and I was trying to figure out where that fit into the mix. But
my story in that anthology actually is a prequel to a character who shows up in Hero of Darkness book 5. And is one of the main characters in the Heirs of Destiny series. So I use that as a way to give more detail on this character. And that'll actually be published at the end of the Heirs of Destiny series.
Awesome. Short stories are kind of have become a way for me to delve into things that I just want to dig into. I want to stop writing X project and move over to Y project because this great idea popped into my head as I was writing about a character or something. And I've found short stories to be a great way for me to fulfill that need to write about something while still staying on deadline with my other projects.
Yeah, I struggle with the word short. the story that's in Defiant Guardians, I intended it to be about 15, 20,000 words. It capped out at about 36.
Oh, wow. That's novella territory.
Yeah. I think the last story that I wrote, I managed by extreme effort to keep it under 10,000 words, but it was going long and I was like, nope, I'm going to rein it. I tend to overcomplicate, not overcomplicate, but complicate, let's say, my storylines. And I want to delve into each aspect of the character and their emotional journey and then their history and the way it relates to the world and the society around them, the way they interact with it. Like there's so much that I want to do in each story that it tends to get way out of control. Like the book I'm working on now is going to be 200,000 words because it just kept getting bigger.
Yeah. That's awesome. The longest book I've written has been about 110,000 words. And I think I like stories that at least the initial story arcs wrap up a little shorter. I tend to write longer series and number of books, but I like the idea of I guess maybe something about my storytelling mode just wraps stories up a little bit quicker in mine. So they tend to end up around 80,000 words for the most part. But I marvel at people who write these like extremely long epic fantasy stories that are into that 200,000 word range because that's just so much to keep track of and such an epic story to have in one spot, which I love reading books like that. So I don't know why I don't write them, but that's just not my mojo, I guess.
Some people's brains just work that way. You know, I know a lot of people who just write these short, tight, focused stories or like Sarah K.L. Wilson and her Dragon School series. Each story arc, each book is only 40,000 words or so, and yet they all come out to one nice big story that works beautifully. And I just can't do that. You know, I've got my story arc planned and I know where I need to go with each book, but they end up getting bigger and bigger because I really like to focus on the characters. So scenes may take longer than I originally intended. One chapter will stretch out to two. A battle will go from two chapters to four. Or things like that, just as the story demands. So I find that my stories tend to get bigger and bigger because I let those things breathe and develop.
You have a really descriptive way of building the world around your characters just in the small amount I've read. I see a really rich world-building aspect to your stories. The description of the hunter coming back into the city after his initial kill in the beginning of the story, just the descriptions of the smells and the sights and the city around him as he walks through the neighborhoods, it really paints a picture. Do you do a lot of that ahead of time, or do you let the world unfold before you as you write?
It kind of depends from story to story. So for the Hero of Darkness story, I basically built each city and each area of the city as it came up in the book. You know, like when I wrote Darkblade Assassin, I had this one city in mind and I built it and it was awesome and it was fun. And then in book two, Darkblade Outcast, he leaves the city and goes on this epic journey across the world. I had no idea where he was going to go. So the next city developed as I needed it. And then the next city after that, and then the desert, and then the mountains and the story, the world just kept getting bigger and bigger. Now I do invest a little bit more forethought into some aspects of it. Like for the one that I'm writing now, the military series, you have to know how far away everything is. So, you know, okay, my army needs to march for 20, 25, 28 days to get there at that moment when they'll be at the battle on time. But so it does take a bit more forethought, but a lot of things like the city descriptions, I'll just let it come up. Unless there's something super important that I need to know beforehand, I'll let it come up as I'm writing it.
You know, you mentioned how, you know, the army has to march from point A to point B. I often wonder what would happen if, you know, a search warrant was served on your average author's laptop and the search history was brought up, you know, from the mundane things like how far can an army march in a day to, you know, how can I hide a body in a swamp?
Yeah. thankfully this series has been pretty innocuous. My search history, a lot of Norse names and meanings and words and stuff like that, a little bit of Viking culture and religion and things like that, a little bit of torture. Actually, I just did a torture scene a couple of days ago, and so there that would show up. But yeah, when I was writing the Hero of Darkness series, there was some dark stuff going on. Also the Queen of Thieves series, that was even darker. Actually, I researched a lot of cults and brainwashing and tortures and things like that. And that was a time when I'm glad the FBI didn't raid my computer history.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that I kind of wonder about, you know, is Big Brother watching while I'm doing this search for a current thing that just popped into my story, and now I have to understand it well enough to write about it. So that's kind of funny. Do you find that the character, you talked about the characters driving your story. And I always ask this because it's one of the joys I find in writing is when the characters do something I didn't expect them to do. And I think non-writers find that interesting or even kind of weird, because how could the character that came out of your brain do something that surprises you? But it happens to be all the freaking time.
Yep. Absolutely. So I was on a podcast a couple of weeks ago with some people talking about this. And what was interesting is that characters, they are both alive and inanimate objects. So they are alive in the sense that they are parts of us combined with parts of people that we've met. So they are real breathing things that in the same way we have a will of our own, have a will of their own. But they're not these things that operate independently of us. They are the sum of our conscious, subconscious, and unconscious mind. So the decisions that they make, they do sometimes feel like they are completely out of the blue, but it's because our brains have put these things in there. So our characters will surprise us all the times, but it's not like they're operating totally independently of us. It's the sort of thing that we would never imagine or consider. Somewhere in our brain, there is this aspect of who we are, the way we think, the way we believe, what we might do in a situation. And so all it is just sort of going along for the ride, letting your mind explore each decision and choice and action and word spoken to see how you would respond, or how the character goes through the same thing that you never thought you would go through until all of a sudden you're writing it and you can see yourself in that situation.
Yeah, that's actually how when I get bogged down and how I hit those moments, hit those walls where it's like, where do I go next? I'm stuck. I tend to have the character. I put myself in the character's shoes and just start writing about what they do next, and then what would they do after that, and invariably within 5 or 10 minutes, I am back into the story again, and they've found a way out of the box, and they've moved on with the rest of the whatever the chapter needs to do.
Yeah. For some reason, for me, it's never about what the characters do. It's what the world has done around them and how they can respond. And that's where I always get stuck. And I kind of have to rejigger my outline or my story plan, because my characters, they don't tend to be self-assured, but they sort of have their way of operating. So I know that one guy, if he's confronted with a challenge, he's going to find a way to hit it hard enough that it goes away. Or another guy is going to find a way to outthink or outtalk it or whatever it is. So the question is how they're going to do that. And that's kind of what I have to figure out. Okay, big problem looming. How would these characters solve it? And then how would they find a way to improve it? And that's where my outlines tend to get a little bit changed.
So when you are working on your projects and everything else that goes on, do you still have to make time to kind of get out there and interact with people? What are your favorite ways of interacting with readers and other people in the genre?
Do you know, Facebook's sort of my go-to. I don't have time to learn Twitter, or I like keeping my Instagram for pictures that I actually want to see. So Facebook is sort of my business thing. I love getting on Facebook. I use Facebook ads a lot, and I check my ads every day to see the comments and things like that. One of my favorite things about using Facebook is you get these snarky comments from people who, you know, they want to bash something about the image you've chosen, or they say, oh, that blurb sounds boring, or it sounds like a ripoff. And I have tons of fun turning those people into readers. It's like my personal challenge to do that.
No, you know, they don't expect you to react back in a non confrontational way. You just kind of like, oh, that's interesting. I never really thought about that before. That wasn't what I was going for at all. This is what I was trying to do. And by interacting with them in that respect, you tend to bring them over. It seems like they're surprised that you took the time to answer them back, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And, I love comic book conventions. I haven't attended a whole lot of book conventions. I've done a couple, but comic book conventions are just a blast because I'm a huge comic book guy, or I used to be. I used to read every comic book that came out every week because I loved them so much. Now I'm just too busy and don't have the time. But I loved diving into the world of comics. So going to these comic conventions and being able to talk to people who love the same comic books and TV shows and movies that I do, it's just a blast. And then being able to tell them about my stories and my worlds and getting them to fall in love with them just as much as I love the same characters that they love, it's my favorite thing in the world. So I'll go to every convention that I can, which isn't that many these days since I'm up here in the frozen Great White North of Canada, not that many conventions around here. But it's just so much fun to be around that ambiance and hang out with people who are as quirky and nerdy and geeky as me.
Yeah, and there's our local community college and library have a joint convention here in our area, and it's small. I think maybe 1,000, 1,500 people attend. But it's great. It's a whole different vibe to stand there and, have your little author table and some of your books laid out and just interact with people as they come by. You see them kind of drawn to your cover and you engage them and say, I point to the character and say, oh, that character was so much fun. I kind of, had to come up with a whole new way of thinking about X. And, they find it. Most of them will stop and talk. And I love talking to people because I like comic books and I like the cosplay, the people that are dressed up in as different anime characters and whatnot. It's just a lot of fun.
It really is. And there's such a great energy to those places. So it gets me out of my shell nicely.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, Facebook's pretty much my jam too. The best piece of advice I ever got from somebody a while ago was don't try to do everything on social media. Pick one or two maybe and do them well. And that's what I've kind of stuck to. I'm a little bit there on Twitter, but most everything I do is focused on Facebook. And I like the fact that you have a longer interaction period with people there. You can have a longer conversation with them on Facebook. Absolutely. So, Let's as we wrap up here, why don't you tell folks where they can find you online, your website, and what kind of things you have coming up next?
Yeah, definitely. So basically, you just search my name, Andy Peliquin. It's kind of a weird name. I apologize for that. It's French Canadian. But you search for that on Google or on Amazon. My website is andypeliquin.com. I'm on Facebook as Andy Peliquin. I'm also a co-host and the more intelligent half of the Fantasy Fiends podcast, which is on YouTube and iTunes and Podbean. We delve into the deeper aspects of fantasy, not just the writing process or the how the story was made, but the humanity, the themes that drive the story, everything from politics to religion to sexuality to gender to identity. It's a ton of fun. We have a lot of fun bringing the stories to life as well. Me and my co-host, we work with the guests to actually like act out, to reenact the scenes, do terrible accents, and have a ton of fun with it. So we do that every week. We go live on YouTube Thursday nights at 5:30 Pacific time, and then all the episodes get uploaded to iTunes and stuff. And right now I've got the last Heirs of Destiny books coming out by May. The sixth book will be released, and then I'll be doing box sets of the Hero of Darkness and Heirs of Destiny series. And in September, a brand new series will be coming out, which is basically Rainbow Six or Ghost Ops set in my fantasy world. It's been a ton of fun to write and a ton of work because I have to learn everything about the military.
That's awesome. I'm actually looking forward to that because that concept really intrigues me. I've done a few situations like just partial settings in a few of my books where there's been like a small unit cohesion kind of thing that had to work out and perform a mission together. And that group dynamic is very different for these highly elite military units.
Oh, absolutely. And the way that they play off each other is just amazing. I actually built the team based around I believe it's a Delta Force Spec Ops teams where, you know, you've got the sniper, you've got the scout, you've got the demolitions, you've got the heavy machine gunner, you've got the rifleman. And so it's fun to build this team based around that and see how each of them will play off each other, sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. And bonding together as a team, it's really helped me to understand not only military people, but people in general a whole lot more.
Well, Andy, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I will second the recommendation of the Fantasy Fiends podcast. That's a great program. Everybody should go check it out. And I'll make sure I have a link to that and everything else you talked about in the show notes for this episode. And please come back on the next time you have something else you want to chat about. We'd love to have you back.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Fantasy Focus podcast. Make sure you catch up with us for a whole lot more coming soon from the Fantasy Focus community, both on Facebook in our group over there, as well as over at fantasy-focus.com. We have written author reviews as well as interviews with people on the podcast. We also have actually reviews and interviews that are in written format over there. So there are lots of great articles. We even have occasional columns by Lee Medeset. He's now a featured columnist over on the site. So you can check that out. And he writes some great things about fantasy, about writing fantasy books, and a whole lot more. Also on that website, though, for our podcast episodes, make sure you subscribe to the show. There are links right there below the player that allow you to subscribe using your favorite mobile app, whether you're on iOS or Android devices. You can even subscribe and get notified of a new episode with a link by email. So make sure you do that. You don't want to miss any of our upcoming episodes. We have some pretty awesome authors scheduled in the next few months. Our next podcast will feature Noelle Nichols, and that was a heck of a podcast. I really enjoyed recording that episode, so you want to make sure you come back for that one. That's it for this episode of the Fantasy Focus podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook at Jamie Davis Books and at my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where you can get a free book if you sign up for my newsletter there. Whatever you do, though, subscribe and come back here for the next podcast. In the meantime, I'll remind you, as I do at the end of every single episode, people, please keep your eyes open. There's magic all around you.